Does art reflect reality? How about horror movies with plots of human possession by demonic forces as part of a satanic ritual and blood sacrifice in exchange for fame and fortune? Well, there's a new film everyone's been talking about. It's called Late Night with the Devil, and today I'm going to walk you through it, point out some amazing connections to Satanism, the occult, Bohemian Grove, and some real-life satanic ritual abuse situations. We're going to reveal some multiple astounding facts that will prove there's a demonic force at work behind this film. From the release on March 22nd to the earnings of $666,000, which I believe was manifested when they used artificial intelligence in the making of this film, to a real-world story about satanic ritual abuse by occultists. Strap in, because you're in for a dark ride. My name is Isaac Weishaupt, and you're listening to the Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture Podcast. I hope you're ready today. I don't know if you are. I don't know if you're ready. It's going to be a lot. We're going to talk about symbolism of owls, Abraxas, the chicken-headed snake god, Bohemian Grove, worshiping the devil, Stanford Research Institute, abracadabra, demonic possession, exorcism lyrics, Mesopotamian deities like Lilith and Pazuzu, blood sacrifices, and so much more. You wouldn't believe the layers in this film, Late Night with the Devil. And there's a wild theory I have about what's really going on. A secret society trying to mess with spirits from the Kabbalistic dark side of the Tree of Life, the other side. But we're going to get to that in the conclusion. All right. We got a lot to get through. Oh, and today is a bonus episode. It's my favorite time of the month. Every month, I do a bonus episode for my supporters as my way of saying thank you for supporting the show and keeping it alive. It's my favorite time. We leave those free feed losers behind, and it's just me and you, the supporters, the OGs, holding down the show. And every month I do a bonus episode, and this is the month of May, so get ready for your bonus episode. And look, if you're on free feed loser status, there's hope for you yet. Yes, you could still join us. There's so many ways. There's three options. Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher is the fan favorite. You get to comment with me. I respond sometimes to the comments on the show. People sometimes want to correct me. I don't like it, but I'll read it. And maybe I'll correct it if I want to. But you can leave positives. You can leave all kinds of good comments, and I'll see them. I'll guarantee I'm going to read them. I can't guarantee I have time to write back, but I definitely read all the comments on Patreon. So it's the most popular. And then the easiest is Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast app. You couldn't make it any easier. You mash the button and you're in. Simple. And then the cheapest option, if you're just a tiny bit handy with technology, you go to VIP section, IlluminatiWatcher.com VIP section, and I can email you an RSS feed and you can save a few bucks. So those are your three options. Links are always in the show notes. Thank you if you're already on the team. As you know, I do the Twin Peaks Grey Lodge series for the bonus for the supporters as well. In fact, I made a change to the way I release those real quick. I'm going to release three episodes a month the first week of the month. That's the plan. If I can keep up. I know I can keep up through, I think, August, and that's when things might get dicey. I might have to lower that down to two. But I'm going to release them all at the same time because I have a lot of people who don't like the, not a lot, but I have some people who don't like the Twin Peaks stuff. And I think they keep seeing it pop up every couple of weeks. I'm like, damn, I wanted a new show. I don't want to hear about Twin Peaks again. So I'm just going to cluster bomb you. I'm going to hit you right in the beginning with all three. So that's how we're doing that. Now, let's talk about this movie, Late Night with the Devil. So anyways, thank you for supporting the show. And look, if you're a free loser, I appreciate you too. I joke. I kid you. I call you a loser. You're not a loser. I appreciate you for subscribing. If you want to support the show, you can leave a review. Leave a 5-star review. We got to counter those 1-star haters with a 5-star review. So thank you. Okay. Should you watch Late Night with the Devil? I mean, probably. If you like horror movies, if you like exorcism type movies, this is good. It's a good one. It's one of the better ones. I enjoyed it. It's only 90 minutes as well. Another bonus. I saw it on Shudder. I wanted to see it in the theaters. I didn't have time. And thank goodness, came through on Shudder, one of my favorite streaming services. And we're already right off the bat, we're already occult illuminate confirm. Okay. It's actually 93 minutes, which is the number used by Aleister Crowley as the summation for Thelema, his alien demonic channeled religion. and the followers of Thelema will write 93 as shorthand for the axiom, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. So right off the bat, we're 93 minutes, illuminate, confirm. And depending on when you're listening to this, and if you follow Donut, me and Jay Dyer did an amazing show with Donut. You got to listen to when he releases it. And he said that it was actually released on streaming services on 4/18, I think he said. I got to look that up. He said, Late Night with the Devil, April 18th. Sorry, I got to do this on the fly. I don't know. He said something about how April 18th was an important day in Late Night with the Devil, which is also an Aleister Crowley number, Libra 4/18. And there's so much more to unpack, so let's just keep moving. First, I'd like to go through who's in this movie. A guy named David Dast Malchian. He plays the main character, Jack Delroy. He's the host of this show. I'm going to go through the plot here in a second. Ironically, he played a character named Abracadabra on CW's The Flash. All right? And Abracadabra comes up in this movie. And it's very important because it's all about worship of Abraxas, as I'll explain later on. More importantly, he was in our beloved Twin Peaks. That's right. He's season 3. He was the pit boss. Hello. Can't wait to get to season 3, folks. And maybe even more importantly than that, holy crap, he's from my hometown, Allentown, PA. Shout out to my Allentown folks. Billy Joel, go F yourself. And he also writes his own comic. This guy does everything. He has a comic called Count Crowley. Oh, my goodness. What's going on here? Count Crowley. Is it about Aleister Crowley? No, it's about a late-night TV horror host, though, who hunts monsters. So similar grounds there. But the Crowley connection surely is something he considered because he's the writer of that comic. There's a woman named Dr. June, played by Laura Gordon. There's a guy named Carmichael Haig, played by Ian Bliss. Now, Ian Bliss, this was interesting because the whole movie, I thought, man, I know this guy. He was in The Matrix. I didn't recognize it at first. He plays Agent Smith in a way because Agent Smith uses this guy's body as a vessel to get into the real world, which is crazy, right? Because we're talking about AI entities possessing human bodies as a theme of this movie. And then the last significant cast I want to talk about is Michael Ironside as a narrator. A legend. Been in David Cronenberg's Scanners, Top Gun, Total Recall. Oh my goodness, this guy's a legend. Now, and we talked about AI. That was one of the big points of drama about this film's release is because, and look, I don't get these film geeks, all right? It was a cool movie. And it caused a big stink because apparently for a few images in the film, 3 still images to be precise, they used artificial intelligence to generate the image. And look, I get it. That's a slippery slope to just queuing up AI films. I don't know what the answer is there, but I think it's ridiculous to say that 3 still images is enough to boycott a movie, but I think it's the principle of the matter. But it's like, come on, we're aided by technology so much. I mean, give me a break. But anyways, I have a theory about the AI that you're going to like. I'm going to talk about it more in the conclusion, but here's the hint. Artificial intelligence is disembodied demonic entities, and they channeled it through this film by allowing it to create the film, and that is why it grossed $666,000. Unbelievable. Now, and let's talk a little bit about that, because the film, it was actually released on March 22nd. That's 322, a very important number in the occult. I've done full shows on this. And the idea is that it's an occult number. It refers to man becoming God, Genesis 3:2-2. And you see it with the Yale Skull and Bones Secret Society. And I'm going to read you from Variety about its record-breaking opening weekend. On the independent scene, Late Night with the Devil took 6th place and summoned $2.8 million from over 1,000 venues, including, and you can't make this up, $666,000 on Sunday. This marks the biggest opening weekend for the distributor IFC Films, overtaking 2022's Watcher, with $826,775. The low-budget thriller stars David... I'm going to butcher his name again. My Allentown brother, David D, double D there, as a late-night talk show host who keeps the cameras rolling during a live satanic incident. The weekend's release of Late Night of the Devil set fire to the old opening record, yada, 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 yada. Okay. But it came in at... And look, I don't know if this is BS marketing. Could be, right? I don't trust anything. But for it to come in sixth place and earn $666,666 on Sunday, the Lord's Day. The Lord's Day is wild. That sounds demonic to me. I mean, if this isn't a publicity stunt, it's incredibly dark. I mean, come on. Now, it said that the film 2022 Watcher, I don't think I've seen that. I thought maybe that was a different movie. Anyway, so that all happened. Without further ado, let's get into the movie. All right, you ready? Spoilers ahead. You already know the spiel. And hopefully you've decided whether you want to watch this movie or let me ruin it for you. As I suggested, you should watch it first. You've been warned. Let's go. Starts out. Wow, that's a lot of pre-credit rolling. There's about 20 pre-credit production companies involved in the making of this movie. It's got to be a record. I mean, it goes on for about 10 minutes, it feels like. You're like, bro, where's the movie, dude? And it finally starts out, and it shows us TV playing clips. You hear the audio narrator, Michael Ironside. It's like, America, the 1970s. And then it proceeds to show you clips from the 60s. Don't ask why. Look, I'm not here to poke holes in plots and things. I think it's just showing you what led up to the 70s, because the movie takes place in 1977, okay? And it's showing us, like, Charles Manson and some riots and all kinds of stuff. And if you look, it flashes by, it says, the Abraxas cult. And we'll come back to that. But the idea here is that it's presenting is that television was a conduit to feed this evil into our homes. That's what the movie's about. It's about channeling and conduiting evil as the AI conduited through the film, making a direct connection of AI to the human soul, tip to tip. Now, we talked about the Abraxas cult back on our Starbucks part one. We did the symbolism of Starbucks, and it took two episodes, if you can believe that, in 2023. And in part one, we talked about Abraxas, because that's the symbol on the Starbucks cup, kind of. And we talked about how Abraxas is the supreme god. And Helena Blavatsky, who wrote The Secret Doctrine, said he's equivalent to Mithra through Kabbalistic values, and the Abraxas is the president over the mysteries of the Father and the Son. Eliphas Levi, a very prominent magician, Aleister Crowley thought he was the rebirth of this guy. He's the guy who drew out the goat with the bobs, Baphomet. He said that Abraxas is the source of magical powers utilized by secret societies. I'm going to read to you from Transcendental Magic. The study of talismans and pentacles is one of the most curious branches of magic and connects with historical numismatics. There are Indian, Egyptian, and Greek talismans, Kabbalistic metals, coming from ancient and modern Jews, Gnostic Abraxas, occult tokens in use among members of secret societies and sometimes called counters of the Sabbath. And what's the Sabbath? Well, it's Sunday. It's the day that this demonic film made all its 666 money. So Crowley, he was into Abraxas. He channeled him in his 1913 Gnostic Mass. Carl Jung, he was into Abraxas. He called Abraxas the ultimate god, combining Jesus and Satan, good and evil, all in one. The reconciliation of opposing forces, which is exactly what the Baphomet symbolizes, right? A male goat with the female bobs. And all this is going to make more sense when we come back to the conclusion, to the theory that I've got for this movie. But so far, I'm thinking, wow, none of this sounds good. All right. So it starts out, it shows us there's this late night talk show. It's UBC's Night Owls is what it's called. They say it premiered on April 4th, 1971. It was hosted by this guy named Jack Delroy. And it has a logo of an owl with horns behind Jack's head. I'm going to show you the images on the Instagram. Go to my Instagram. You know the deal. Instagram.com/, you know, at Isaac Weishaupt, whatever. Links in the show notes. And I'm going to put these images on there of what I'm talking about. But it's basically a sketch late night talk show. And they double... Look, I'm going to be honest with you. The first half of this movie, I thought it was kind of boring. I thought it was corny. And I was like, this is stupid. The second half is where it picks up. And that's where it's great. But the first half, they're really laying it on thick about how corny it is. And it's, you know, what you expect. Sleazy 70s lounge lizard humor. And the host is like, you know, 5 nights a week, Jack helps an anxious nation forget its troubles. And we're introduced to one of the CEO, Walker Bedford. He's the sort of Lucian Grange of television. He signs Jack Delroy's late night show, Night Owls, to a 5-year deal because he wants to take on and beat Johnny Carson. And we hear that Jack Delroy's married to a woman named Madeline Piper. And then they're like, but she's not the only source of support. And then they talk about The Grove, which is the Bohemian Grove. Now, before I play this clip, Madeline Piper, that's an interesting name, right? Because it also reminds me of Twin Peaks. That's right. Piper Laurie. Is there a relation here? Not at all. I just wanted to bring it up because Catherine Martell is the character played by Piper Laurie. She actually just passed away October 14th of last year, sadly, tragically. You know, she's one of the many babes of Twin Peaks. A lot of people don't include her in the list, but man, she looked good. I mean, she was, you know, she should have been included on the list. But yeah, Piper Laurie just passed away. Now, let's get into the clip, and you're going to hear about how Jack had some support from this group called The Grove. Take a listen.
Madeline is his muse and his confidant, but she is not his only source of support. Jack's association with The Grove, a men-only club located in the Redwoods of California, has been the subject of rumors since his days in radio. Established in the 1800s and counting among its members, politicians, entertainers, and captains of industry, The Grove has long portrayed itself as a harmless summer camp for the rich and powerful. But speculation swirls around its taste for arcane ceremony and its power to make and break careers. 4 seasons on, and ratings still fail to match Carson. The nominations mount, but no trophy. Jack's reputation as perennial also-ran starts to bite. He knows that history remembers only kings.
So yeah, The Grove is a boys club out in the California Redwoods, established in the 1800s. It's a bunch of politicians, entertainers, captains of industry, and it's a party for the rich and powerful. They've got these arcane ceremonies. They can make or break careers. This is, of course, referring to the Bohemian Grove, which is identical in all those ways. Now, you're probably thinking, you probably tuned into this episode thinking, oh, Isaac's going to talk about Bohemian Grove for the entire time. No, absolutely not. You already know all about it because you have liked and subscribed to this podcast and you don't miss any episodes. We are all going down this journey together, okay? And we already know. We've already talked about it. In fact, in December of 2023, we did a full Bohemian Grove discussion when that guy infiltrated Bohemian Grove on YouTube and posted the video. And, you know, I don't want to give anything away about what this film is secretly about. It's not just Bohemian Grove and the entertainment industry deals with the devil. That's on the surface. It's deeper than that. We'll talk about what this is actually about in the conclusion, where we'll come back to this because it's more about the females and the owls, which are not what they seem. They all play a role here, okay? So Jack Delroy's got his show, and in 5 years, he still can't beat Johnny Carson, and now he's going the other way. Now he's slipping on the ratings. His wife, Madeline Piper, she gets diagnosed with throat cancer. and he interviews her on the show. It's the highest rated episode. And even with that, he still is 1 point shy of beating Carson. Now, this is, she dies 2 weeks later. So this is, of course, him using her on her, basically on her deathbed to get ratings, which is pretty disgusting. Now, maybe she was cool with it. Maybe she liked it. I don't know. You know, I don't want to assign my thoughts to it, but the idea is that she is a blood sacrifice for this guy. Again, on the surface. So Jack Delroy, you know, she's dead now, and he flees New York. He's in an unknown location, and he's grieving. And he's gone for a month. And he comes back to host Night Owls again, but his ratings continue to slip. Even though he starts getting more sensational, more, you know, Maury Povich, bring out the olives, more Jerry Springer-esque. But everything's on the line now, okay? He's thought he could do it. He's not able to beat Carson. Everything's on the line. He's got an episode where he's planning his last-ditch effort to turn it all around. It's now Halloween night, 1977, the start of sweeps week, so this is very important. Everything matters. Everything hinges on this night, which is what this is, what this recording, this movie is about. Which, again, like, we could talk about Halloween being Illuminate confirmed, but you already know this. Every year on around Halloween, I post an episode where we talk about the symbolism of Samhain, the pagan occult holiday, All Hallows Eve, all that stuff. So obviously, Halloween's got some occult things. It's the time when the veil is the thinnest between the living and the dead. All right. And this whole movie is showing, it's kind of like a found footage deal where they say this is the episode that wasn't shown to the public until now. And then we kind of, you know, after they set it all up, they show us the episode of what really happened that night. And there's another character. It's the, you know, I don't watch late night TV. I think it's stupid. But for every host, there's always the co-host guy, the kind of, I don't know, the supporting role guy, the hype man, whatever you want to call it. He's always standing over there by the band. So Jack Delroy's hype man is Gus. All right. And it's Halloween, of course, so he's dressed like the devil. And he's playing a theremin, you know, that woo, that sounding instrument for Halloween. The whole stage is set up, you know, everyone's got costumes, there's jack-o'-lanterns, it's very Halloween, right? And you know, like I said, the first like 45 minutes, I hate everyone. I hate Jack Delroy. He's just so much. He's so corny. I would think that if you sold your soul to the devil, you'd be a little more funny than this guy. He's just corny. But it's supposed to be corny. It's the 70s, and it's a late night show. So Jack cues up his first guest. He's a medium, a spiritualist. His name is Christou. I forget how he says it on the movie. Christou. And ultimately, I see parallels to Christ, right? In the name there. Nothing in particular stands out, but with this character, I should say. But we hear how Christou talks about how All Hallows Eve is a night to go through the gateway to the underworld. He starts to do psychic readings. He's trying to connect with spirit and the crowd. He ultimately tunes into two women. Channels a member of their family that died. And right after that, he receives this psychic attack. And he's like in pain. And he's like, does anybody know a person named Minnie? And he envisions an unmarried man wearing a wedding ring. And then it kind of releases and then he's fine. Then they break for a commercial. Jack has some back and forth with the producer, who's a real hard ass, you know. And then he comes back, they bring out the next guest. It's this skeptic named Carmichael Haig. And his whole deal is he's punching holes in the paranormal, ghosts, spirits, talking to the dead. He says it's all illusions. And he's got a check for $100,000. It's a reward to anyone who can prove to him that the supernatural is real. And he is, of course, at odds with Christou, saying that, you know, Christou is a liar, a charlatan, a fake. Like those two women he channeled, it turned out there was one of the producers interviewed them before they showed up, you know, that kind of thing. Like if you've ever seen Leap of Faith with Steve Martin, like that. That's what he's implying. So then Chris Du has a massive reaction, and he spits up the black goo, all right? Now, presumably it's blood. Someone commented to me and said it was the black goo, and I thought, eh, maybe. They later call it spouting, but we see black, if it is black goo, we see it in occult films like Prometheus, where David the android, he opens a cylinder, it's got the black goo, and it starts the alchemical process. And, you know, he asks the Holloway what he'd be willing to do to find answers, and Holloway says anything. Anything. That's his desperate Faustian bargain. So David the android's programming allows him to put black goo in Holloway's drink, and he eventually meets his fate. He goes through the alchemical process, and he ends up on fire like the phoenix. The black goo symbolizes the alchemical process, the Negredo, the first stage in the great work. So they cut to break. Chris Du implies that Jack has friends at the Grove, and because I guess it's like sort of, I don't know, rumor, speculation. Chris Du is very interested in the orgies, by the way. Which is funny because they supposedly, Bohemian Grove is an all-boys club. But if you read Bohemian Grove Cult to Conspiracy by Mike Hansen, tells you that, no, there's definitely women there. There's kids, there's women, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. Prostitutes. So anyways, the cameraman, whenever they come back from break, he goes, 5, 4, you know that trope you see when, I'm sure that's how it actually works in TV recording or whatever. It's like 5, 4, and then it's silence. So they don't pick up the 3, 2, 1 on the recording, I guess. And I, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking, is this a way of, because it happens many times in the film, and I find myself mentally, when he says 5, 4, and then in my head, I'm participating in the film, I'm going 3, 2, 1. It's almost like a form of hypnosis for the audience watching this movie to participate mentally and engage subconsciously. So then Jack brings out the next guests, Dr. June Ross Mitchell, who wrote Conversations with the Devil, all right? And to introduce her, he plays a video that Dr. June had about the First Church of Abraxas, and this is where the movie gets good, all right? And you find out that the girl she's bringing out with her, Lily, was unfortunately part, unknowingly, part of the First Church of Abraxas. Take a listen.
A seemingly ordinary house on an ordinary street. Only this is the headquarters of the infamous First Church of Abraxas.
I command thee to come forth and bestow these blessings of hell upon us.
Hail Abraxas!
Hail Abraxas!
The church's founder and leader, the enigmatic Xander Diabo.
Abraxas shows us there is no good, no evil, no redemption. Only what we desire and how we obtain it.
You make it sound very easy, Monsieur Diabo.
Make no mistake. The master demands sacrifice.
Diabo's activities come to the attention of the FBI, who suspect the cults of kidnapping and firearm offenses. But even more alarming are the stories of children being bred for human sacrifice.
And the spilling of blood. Come forth, open the gates of hell.
Diabo claims that anyone who witnesses these dreadful rituals will fall under the spell of the demon Abraxas, and so perform his earthly bidding.
And so it is done!
Events take a tragic turn in August 74 when federal agencies lay siege to the house.
Shots have been fired.
After a tense 3-day standoff, Diabo commands his followers to douse the premises and themselves in gasoline. But remarkably, among the smoldering ruins, a terrified 10-year-old girl is discovered. She goes only by the name of Lily. Her memories of her time in the house, fractured and incomplete. Was her survival part of Diabo's wicked master plan? Or was she simply the lucky one? At a loss to explain Lily's strange behavior, the FBI contacts my Psi Research Center. Lily and I make an immediate connection. Important breakthroughs follow, but there is still much work to be done.
It's 2:30 p.m., July 10th, 1976. This is a recording of our first session. Okay, it seems we've made contact. Who am I speaking to now? Is this the demon known as the...
So on that clip, we heard that the founder of the First Church of Abraxas was Sandor Diabo. Clearly a play on words, right? Diabo is just like Diablo, which means devil. Sandor is the founder of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey. That's his middle name is Sandor, which is also an Eyes Wide Shut, by the way. Sandor Savast. Now, they're doing this Church of Abraxas, they're doing rituals, and they've got, you know, pentagrams and skulls and all this stuff. And Diabo espouses the Church of Satan doctrine, as well as saying, the master demands sacrifice, all right? Now, there are claims of children being bred for sacrifice, kidnapping. They do stuff, they break the law in this group because it's an antinomianism. It's against the social cultural norms. It has the idea that there is no such thing as evil. That's a social construct. Therefore, they will prove that they are not held to the social construct. They will do all acts of evil, including sacrifice of kids. And then it says in 1974, there was a standoff between Diabo and the feds. They light themselves on fire. The Church of Abraxas does. This 10-year-old girl, Lily, lives through the fire, and she is now on stage with Dr. June. And the FBI, when they got Lily, they contacted the Psychic Research Center, which is how she got in contact with Dr. June, because they were like, look, this kid's acting crazy. She's acting possessed. And Dr. June has since been taking care of her. All right? So Dr. June and Lily come out. Right off the bat, you know something's wrong with Lily. This chick's, she acted like Susan Atkins from the Manson family. Right off the bat. And there's something really creepy I want you to hear, because Lily says to Jack, I know who you are, Mr. Delroy. I think you're going to be very famous soon.
Have you ever watched my show before?
No, I'm normally in bed by now. But I know who you are, Mr. Delroy.
Oh, please, you can call me Jack.
June says you're very handsome, Jack. You're the man whose wife died of cancer.
Lily, I don't think Jack wants to...
I was very sad when I heard about that. I know what it's like to lose people who are close to you. It's lonely at first, but you'll get through.
Such wise words from one so young, huh?
Lily has been through more in her 13 years than most adults go through in a lifetime.
And you needn't worry about your TV show. I think you're going to be very famous soon.
Why, thank you for the reassurance. I was beginning to wonder, Gus.
Me too.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. But on the other side, yes, the other side, we're going to spend some time getting to know these two extraordinary ladies.
Now, not only is that super foreboding, but also if you caught it, Jack talked about going to the other side. Now, in Kabbalah, going to the other side is a reference to the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life, where the fallen spirits, the Klipoth, reside. All right? It's the realm of the damaged gods, as Kenneth Grant would say. Now, they've got owls on the TV promotion for the show, of course. It's called Night Owls, right? And, you know, the owls are not what they seem. And it, of course, refers to the Grove, Bohemian Grove, with the big owl statue, which used to be a large, in real life, it actually used to be a big Buddha statue made of plaster of Paris, and now it's a big owl with fake moss all over it, which is really weird. Now, you can tell something's off with Lily, right? She's staring into the camera during the break when it's not even filming, and Dr. June during the break says, like, Jack, we need to talk. And tells him how Lily's becoming more unstable and unpredictable. Maybe they shouldn't even do all this because she was in this weird state yesterday. And she was saying Jack's name as if she had went through an experience with him in the past. And Jack's like, oh, she was probably just excited to come meet me. And we're going to find out later, no, there's more to it. So we find out Chris Du, after his spouting event with the black goo, died. He had a hemorrhage in the ambulance. And he wasn't putting on an act. Jack thought he was putting on an act. He's like, I thought that was part of the show. And they're like, nah, he's dead. Okay, not good. Not good. But then we hear Dr. June, who asserts she is a parapsychologist from Stanford Research Institute, and she is studying the demonic possession, or what she refers to as the psychic infestation of Lily.
What exactly does
that... I call myself one because that's what I am, Jack. It so happens I have a PhD in the subject.
From the University of Hogwash, if I'm not mistaken.
The Stanford Research Institute, actually.
The difference being...
Is it really worth us continuing if this man is going to interrupt every time you ask a question?
Carr, please behave.
As I was going to say, we parapsychologists believe there are certain phenomena, psi phenomena, that traditional science is ill-equipped to understand. Telepathy, for example, telekinesis, apparitional anomalies.
Demonic possession.
Psychic infestation is the term we prefer, but yes.
And it's your belief that Lily here presents just such a case.
For the past 3 years, I've been combining age regression therapy with a growing understanding of ancient satanic rituals to piece together the details of Lily's life and to grasp the nature of the demon that lurks within her.
This is the demon Abraxas that the charming Mr. Diabo spoke of in your eclipse.
No, I believe it's more likely one of the minor deities said to serve Abraxas. These entities thrive on our confusion.
And our stupidity.
Look, I understand that some of this might seem to stretch credulity. But remember, big, new, scientific ideas are always greeted with some resistance. It's only the most close-minded that greet them with ridicule.
We know that Dr. June studied age regression therapy with Lily, and she also studied the history of satanic ritual abuse. She thinks that there's this minor deity to Abraxas that's sort of possessed her. And she has a good point about how science actually doesn't answer all of the questions, because she's a parapsychologist, which apparently the, you know, genuine science people have an issue with. And she works at Stanford Research Institute, SRI, which I talk about in my first Alien book, because SRI is where lots of these intelligence agency studies have been conducted, you know, Stargate and Uri Geller and Ingo Swann and Hal Putoff from To the Stars Academy and Russell Targ, all these things. They've always been remote viewing and messing with the paranormal and extra-dimensional contact with entities. So Dr. June, she actually brings out various artifacts, including a dagger from the Diabo Satanic Ceremonies, which plays a role later. Okay. Now, Carmichael Haig, he's the skeptic, of course, and he says that, well, Abraxas is the consummate showman who craves attention. And he rightfully points out that Abraxas is the source for the most famous incantation ever. And Lily responds, abracadabra, because she knows. And this is very true. The magical word abracadabra comes from the worship of the Gnostic god Abraxas. And it literally means the dead body or corpse of Abraxas. It's also mentioned in The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall, who sources it from Albert Mackey, and he's a Freemason who wrote the Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, and it goes on and on and on. Aleister Crowley also used abracadabra, and with gematria, he changed it to abrahadabra. Anyway. So yes, all that's true. It's a magical word. So that tells us that this isn't just satanic activity, it's also ritual magic in a way. So Lily talks about how the person who possesses her is called Mr. Wriggles, because he wriggles in and out of her head. And how June says everyone has a demon inside of them. This is like the shadow. We all have a shadow to confront. At this point, the theremin starts going crazy on its own. Lily says it was Mr. Wriggles who did it. Carmichael thinks it was just feedback. You know, he's the debunking skeptic. Lily says, Mr. Wriggles is in the studio right now. And Jack Delroy, you know, he sees ratings. He's like, well, let's invite him onto the show. Dr. June's like, no, we shouldn't do that for a variety of reasons. She also says, look, you need a controlled environment, not a TV studio. But Jack Delroy wants them. He wants them ratings up. So he's like, we're doing it. And Lily even jumps on board and convinces Dr. June to allow it. Okay. Carmichael, he even wants to do it. He's like, I got $100,000 right here for you if you can prove this is real. So Dr. June requires the consent of the audience to do this. Okay. An interesting idea, because that's a theme you hear oftentimes from conspiracy theorists and occultists, is that these Luciferian global government Illuminate confirmed folks, they need our consent. They show us these things and they want us to participate in their evil because they need our consent. So Gus, and I think a conspiracy theorist was behind this movie, because Carmichael says, oh, it's all bread and circus. It's all entertainment, which is a concept you hear about the fall of the Roman Empire, about how they were entertained to death, you know? So Gus warns Jack to stop before something bad happens, right? Because Jack's pushing, he wants these ratings up. So, but Gus, he's a little hesitant. He's like, man, I don't think you should do this, Jack. Jack's like, get out the way. Move, bitch, get out the way. And they've got Dr. June and Lily come back from the break. They're set up in chairs. Lily strapped down to hers, and they try to summon Mr. Riggles. And Dr. June says that, look, I'm just the key here to unlock the door to allow Mr. Riggles to enter the world through Lily, right? And that's symbolically, it's the mystery of the keys. The key is the most powerful symbol in Freemasonry, unlocking the gateway to other worlds. So Dr. June puts Lily into this trance state. She's summoning Mr. Riggles. Lily starts contorting her face. Her face looks demonic, like an animal face, and she's got these changes in the voice. You can hear someone in the crowd go, is that the devil? So now you got Mr. Riggles coming through Lily, possessing Lily. And they're asked what the purpose is. And she says, he's here, isn't he? And says, great to see you again, Jack. So Lily, a.k.a. Mr. Riggles' spirit, says, great to see you again, Jack. And says, we go way back. We met amongst the tall trees, remember? And obviously a reference to the Bohemian Grove. And Lily implies that Dr. June and Jack are having an affair. Dr. June slaps her. And we get a quick shot of Lily's face looking demonic. I'll put the photo on the Instagram because you got to freeze frame it. And, you know, this kid's looking pretty evil right now. And Dr. June, she starts her exorcism on this, on Lily, to get Mr. Riggles back out. And she's using these Latin phrases like vado retro satana. And apparently this comes from an actual Christian formula for exorcism, going to Saint Benedict. Now this is where it gets interesting, because if you go to the Wikipedia here, it says the verse vado retro satana is similar to a phrase that appears in several places in the New Testament. Firstly, in the Gospel of Mark, spoken by Jesus to Peter, is the admonition, vade retro me satana, get behind me Satan. The exact origin of the passage as a whole is not clear. It is found in an early 13th century legend of the Devil's Bridge at Sens, wherein an architect sold his soul to the devil and then subsequently repented. M. Le Curé of Sens, wearing his stole, exorcised the devil, driving him away with holy water in these words. Now, I went to the source of that claim, the Irish Quarterly Review, Volume 6, Part 1, through Google Books. And the Latin phrases, they abbreviate it as SRS and SMQL, which are found on various Christian references, like the Cross of Saint Benoit, which they call the Sorcerer's Cross or the Magician's Cross. And in the citations for that, they claim that it came from the Devil's Bridge at Sens, where the devil made a Faustian bargain and gave wealth to this architect named Guinefert for the purchase of his soul. It says that he went on to be one of the lights of the age, which I assume means a very powerful person. It says that says that later he has remorse and begged pardon from God and his saints, and a priest used holy water to chase the devil away, and he used that phrase in exorcism, the one you hear in the film. And apparently later on, that phrase would become part of the Roman Catholic rites of exorcism. Now, during the exorcism, Dr. June also says, "You were cursed by Anum and Antum, Lamum and Durum. The underworld and those that lie in it." And this is a reference to the Mesopotamian underworld. Antum was the Mesopotamian earth goddess with Anum as the sky god. And they were associated with the Mesopotamian ideas of an underworld, which included a demon named Pazuzu as an inhabitant. You may recognize that name because that is the name of the demon in The Exorcist. All right. We'll come back to that in the conclusion. At this point, we see electricity flying around the room. Lily starts levitating in her chair. But then, just like that, it's over. And Lily's back in her body. Good job, Dr. June. Okay. So Carmichael, he's convinced this was all trickery. And he's like, "I'm going to prove it to you," after the commercial break, right? Of course. So Jack cuts Lily loose from her chair with the satanic dagger. I was like, bro, don't touch that thing, man. And then this is during the commercial break. And then Gus confronts the producer. His name is Leo. Leo, which I think, isn't that the astrology sign for the lion, which is a reference to Christ, I think? I don't know. Does that fit in there? I don't really know. And Gus is like, bro, you shouldn't do this, Leo. But Leo's like, move, bitch, get out the way. We making this money, all right? Then Bedford, the CEO, the sort of Lucian Grange of the outfit, apparently calls the station and says, look, this has turned out to be the biggest TV event since that fake moon landing. Now, he doesn't call it fake. He should call it fake, but he says, biggest event since the moon landing. Jack Delaware, he's all hype now. And he's like, yeah, I'm interviewing the devil on TV, you know. And Jack says how when Lily was talking with Mr. Rails, he swore he heard Minnie's voice. So now we're back from the commercial break. Jack Delroy's interviewing Lily. Carmichael's still bitching. He's like, oh, this is all parlor tricks, and you can do the same thing through hypnosis, and he's going to prove it. And he takes Gus up on stage. Poor Gus, man. He's like, man, I don't want nothing to do with any of this. And he hypnotizes Gus into thinking his guts are filled with worms, you know? And it's really weird because on the movie, you watch it and it's like a really horrifying scene. Like, he's actually pulling his guts out. But when he puts him in the hypnosis, Carmichael, he holds the stopwatch. It's got the black and white swirling, right? And the viewers are watching it too. So again, breaking that fourth wall and bringing the audience into the movie itself. So Gus, he's in a trance, thinks he's pulling his guts out. And then, like, all of a sudden, poof. Like, he's not. He's fine. He's in his clothes. He's like, whoa, what happened? So they play the video back because Jack and everyone thought this was really happening. And they're like, I swear, I saw it with my own eyes. You telling me that wasn't real? Jack says, that's not quite the way I remember when they play back the video footage because it's not the same thing. So now it's like really weird things happening. There's an illusion going on. So during the tape replay, Jack takes it frame by frame and sees the ghost of Minnie, his wife, standing behind him. And this is where things go haywire. Things go off the rails. And it's pretty gnarly. Lily, she all of a sudden gets super possessed. Her electricity is shooting out of her arms, and she got one arm up, one arm down. She's in the goat with the bobs, as above, so below stance. Her head splits down the middle. Flames are coming out of her head and her eyes. This is not good. Gus, he's got his cross necklace on. That must have been why he had beef with us from the jump. And demonic Lily here magically spins his head 180 degrees. Boom, he's dead. Dr. June, she starts hanging by her necklace, and boom, throat slice. She's dead. Carmichael, he tries to hand his check over, And Lily, possessed by Mr. Riggles, says abracadabra and burns him up from the inside out. Jack is like crap in his pants. He gets one look at Lily before the cameras go black. And the recording, you see an image manifest in the fuzz of the station going to the technical difficulty screen. And here's where it gets weird. If it wasn't weird yet. You get this odd dreamlike sequence of, you know, Gus introducing Jack Delroy like it's a regular old night of shooting. But Jack, he's bugging because he's like, this isn't a normal night. I just seen all these people get murdered by this possessed child. And he's confused. He's like, how did I get here? And Gus is like, oh, you took the train or whatever, right? And he's got these flashbacks to all these different skits he's done in the past. The snake handler, the cave skit, his interview with Millie right before she died, you know, that big episode. Millie, I forget. Anyways, Minnie gives him this nefarious look, like she's pissed off at him, though. Jack is now begging the audience to turn their television off. There's this spinning hypnosis wheel, and he flashes to the signing of his contract with the CEO, the Lucien Grange Bedford character. Take a listen to how this whole scene starts to unfold.
Turn off your TV sets. Turn it off! Turn it off! Turn it off!
Stop! Please.
Welcome to the family, Jack.
Jack, congratulations on your ratings win. What did you have to sacrifice to get here tonight?
Oh, Jack Delroy's greatest sacrifice is yet to come. Now drink up, Jack.
Finally made it, darling. But you had to pay a price. Except Minnie. Stitch left.
I never thought that they...
Your soul belonged to them. It still does.
It wasn't supposed to turn out this way. You have to believe me.
You're ruined now, Jack.
I love you.
I love you.
They ask him what he had to sacrifice to get here, and the CEO guy says, the greatest sacrifice is yet to come. And they flash to the Bohemian Grove, and all these masked, eyes wide shut people. And guess who's there? Diabo, the guy, the Church of Satan guy from the Church of Abraxas. And they're taking Jack through the woods to this owl man who directs him to drink from this chalice. He then flashes to seeing his dying wife in the hospital, and she says, they told you you could have it all, and how he had to pay a price. Exit mini stage left, and your soul belongs to them. She was, in fact, the blood sacrifice for his fame, but he lost his soul in the process as well. She asks him to do one last thing for her, and she looks to the dagger, the satanic dagger, and implies that she wants him to kill her because she's in such pain. He grabs the dagger and reluctantly stabs his wife in the chest. And at this point, he wakes up. And it turned out he stabbed Lily in the chest. But he's at the TV set. There's dead bodies everywhere. So we don't really know what happened here. And that's where it ends, right? Was it all an illusion? Was the Grove watching all of this? And he keeps saying, dreamer here awake, like he's trying to wake up from the hypnosis, from this terrible nightmare he's having. And then the credits roll. And there's a lot going on here. So let's kind of reconfigure here and look at some wrap up, some ideas. Okay. Remember the artificial intelligence thing we talked about how they used AI in to make this movie, essentially. It made three still images, apparently. But I think it's possible that they're summoning AI into the art, and that's how that 666 number came through on the sales on Sunday. And, you know, we interviewed Professor Diana Pasalka about her book Encounters, and she more or less talks about this, about AI being possibly disembodied entities from another dimension, us from the future, maybe. I got to do a book club on that. I've got all the notes. I just got to do it. So is AI satanic, demonic, fallen spirits? Apparently. I think this is Illuminati confirmed. Call me crazy. But I think we're also seeing, more importantly, is a play on opposing polarities in this movie. Let me explain. I think we're seeing a play on Lilith and Pazuzu. And I'm not entirely sure how it fits together, but let's walk through it. Lily, of course, a play on the term for Lilith, the female figure in Mesopotamian mythology, the first wife to Adam, and of course, a demon. She was banished from the Garden of Eden for not obeying Adam. Lilith in Hebrew is translated as night creature or screech owl, right? There's that owl again. And then what's the show called? Night Owls. And she's believed to be a very sexual woman who steals babies at night. All right. Note the show is called called Night Owls. So I think this is a direct reference to Lilith and stealing babies. Now, she is compared to another Mesopotamian demon that's very similar called Lamashtu that we'll talk about soon. Now, recall at the end, we wrap up the movie at the Grove, the Bohemian Grove, where they're all being directed by the owl, and the people start screeching like owls. So it's kind of a cult to Lilith, or the cult of Isis, as is described in the book Bohemian Grove Cult of Conspiracy by Mike Hansen. Now let's talk about Pazuzu real quick. Pazuzu is actually a good demon, quote unquote, but it's a demon utilized in white magic. And they summon Pazuzu to ward off the evil female demon of Lamashtu, which is akin to Lilith, all right? So Pazuzu is apparently an opposing polarity force to Lilith or Lamashtu. And Pazuzu is what they call apotropaic, which means he can turn away evil. He can avert the evil eye, which Dr. Judy during the movie holds up in Greek culture, there's this little blue eyeball, and it's supposed to avert the evil eye. And Dr. Judy holds that up to Lily when she's possessed. I'm going to read to you, I think this is from Wiki, I'm not sure. As an apotropaic entity, he is considered as both a destructive and dangerous wind, but also as a repellent to other demons, one who safeguards the home from their influence. In particular, he protects pregnant women and mothers, whom he could defend from the machinations of the demoness Lamashtu, his rival. He is invoked in ritual, and representations of him are used as defense charms. Now, something interesting I read was that the ancient Greeks would also dress up boys as girls to ward off the evil eye. For example, Achilles was dressed as a girl, and he was obviously a boy. Now, could it be, I'm just throwing this out there as a side tangent, could it be that all this talk about cross-dressing in Hollywood, you know how they Dave Chappelle talked about this, and Cat Williams was talking about how Kevin Hart is wearing a dress because the Hollywood people make him do it, because the Hollywood people are really deep into this occultism, right? Could it be that they're trying to ward off evil? I mean, that apparently is a thing. And you probably think, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it doesn't make any sense that rockers and satanic rock bands and Ozzy Osbourne, they wear crosses and they are employing dark forces all the time. They do it because they're trying to utilize the dark forces, but they don't want to be possessed by these things. So they know the power of Christ can keep it away. They think they can channel and play with these demonic forces, yet be protected. It's a weird thing to do, but that's how they do it. Now, the appearance of Pazuzu is described as a combination of diverse animal and human parts. His body is of canine form, though scaled, not furred. Yada, yada, yada. He holds his right hand up and his left hand down, which is just like the goat with the bobs and just like Lily does when she's possessed by the electricity at the end. His face is striking with gazelle horns, human ears, a dog-like muzzle, bulging eyes, and wrinkles on the cheeks. Now, I don't know if that's a verbatim description of what Lily looks like when she's possessed by Mr. Wriggles, but it's worth pointing out, we'll say. Now, there are questions behind this. If this is the spirit of Pazuzu inside of her, why is he killing everyone? Well, I think a demon's a demon. A good demon or a bad demon, it wants the blood, okay? It could be because they're all evil. It could be Pazuzu trying to protect Lily, or aka Lilith or Lamashtu, even though that's the, or protecting Lily from Lamashtu. Because, and why would he protect Lily? It's because it's believed that Pazuzu protects pregnant women from Lamashtu, the baby-snatching evil demon Lamashtu. So what we're saying here is that maybe Lily is pregnant. All right? Stick with me, folks. Don't tune out yet. I'm swinging for the fences here, okay? I'm not saying this is a bulletproof theory. I'm just bringing it up. What if Lily is pregnant? Why would she be pregnant? Is it possible that Jack impregnated her at the Grove as part of a satanic ritual? Because Lily kept saying, "It's good to see you again, Jack." Like she had beef with Jack. And we know from Mike Hansen's book that this Grove, the Bohemian Grove cult, is devoted to goddess worship and child sacrifice. Here, take a listen. I'm going to read to you from it. And we talked about this on the Bohemian Grove show, but I'm going to read to you from it again. The owl throughout occult history usually is a symbol of a female entity, such as Athena, aka Ishtar or Isis, a prominent member of the Babylonian, that's Mesopotamian, and related pantheons, known among other things as the goddess of wisdom. Considered the mascot of Athens, the owl was even named for the goddess Athena. Scientific name Athena noctua, which I think is night owl. All right, let's see. I got more here. Well, they talk about how King Arthur's Merlin was depicted with an owl on his shoulder. That's interesting. Okay. I was just thinking about Twin Peaks. In the final analysis, the Great Owl of Bohemia symbolizes the cult of Isis by symbolizing all four of its gods, Ishtar, Lucifer, and by virtue of the associated flames representing abandonment to Lucifer, stimulated desires, Dionysus, and the greater Moloch, Satan. Bohemian Grove literature boasts that the cremation of care ceremony derives from druid rites. So on and so on, okay? Now, I'm going to jump 100 pages here, to an interview between Alex Jones and Tex Mars. Because Mike Hansen was... He went to Bohemian Grove with Alex Jones. Him and Alex Jones infiltrated. Let's see here. And Tex Mars, who's a legend in this field, he reads from the Women's Dictionary of Symbols and Sacred Objects. Says, the wise owl appears with witches at Halloween, the Celtic feast of the dead. It has a past association with many forms of the Chrome goddess. Also, it's associated with Lilith, Athena, Minerva, and the owl-eyed goddess Marie, which makes me think of False Marie from Metropolis. It says that these goddesses often were said to take the owl's shape as their own. The owl was known as a bird of death. It says that to the Babylonians, the owls, the hooting owls, were ghosts of women who died in childbirth, calling for their offspring. It says there's a time-honored connection of the midwife goddess with owls. Then it says, in medieval times, the owl was sometimes called the night hag. Like the night owls, the name of this show. Like the daughters of Lilith, who were possessed by demonic succubi. Female spirits with owl wings were feared as potential kidnappers of infants. We're talking about kidnappers of infants, the night hag, connected with the great goddess of Babylon. So we have this huge idol of the owl. Anyway, so there's more to it than just worshiping an owl. And I think that it's very reasonable to say that Lily or Lilith, a.k.a. Lamashtu, and Pazuzu are having a battle here. Pazuzu's battled in a way to combat her. We see Pazuzu's face taking over Lilith's body during the summoning. There's something to it, right? And like I said, I don't know the exact details on it, but what I think we're looking at is the idea that secret societies, which is the Grove here, are trying to reconcile opposing forces of good and evil through ritual magic and satanic ritual. Recall that Carl Jung said Abraxas is the ultimate god who combined Jesus and Satan, good and evil. So we know the Grove was working with the cult of Abraxas. We know that because Diablo, Xandor, was shown with the owl and the Grove at the end of the movie. They were all trying to reconcile Lilith with Pazuzu, the opposing forces of good and evil. In simpler terms, I think Jack Delroy impregnated and raped Lily at the Grove during a ritual to incarnate or at least satisfy Lucifer, a.k.a. Abraxas. I think that's what we're looking at. And we also see Jack willing to make the Faustian bargain for fame and fortune, including with his own wife's soul, which is terrible. Now, deeper cuts on the theory would be that we're witnessing the attempted fusing of Lilith with Lamashtu. Sounds kind of crazy, right? But let me finish this show with a real talk about the cult of Abraxas. I'm going to read you from the Irish Times. This is from the 1990s. Police investigating a Belgian gang accused of child sexual abuse and murder raided the headquarters of a satanic sect at the weekend looking for clues. It said 150 police and special investigators raided the headquarters of the Institute Abraxas near the central Belgian city of Charleroi. The television showed police taking away bags of papers, video cassettes, and a refrigerator. It also said they took away black magic ritual implements and human skulls. RTBF said the raid had been prompted by the discovery of an undated letter addressed to someone named Bernard, asking him to remind someone else that a special ceremony was approaching and to remember a special gift. The letter was signed by Anubis, an ancient Egyptian god and the assumed name of the high priest of the Abraxas sect. Now, I want to look up more on this. So Wikipedia, the French Wikipedia, had an entry for this because that's where all this went down, apparently. I had to use software to translate it, so this might get a little choppy. I'll do my best. The Abraxas because it's not spelled exactly the same, they transposed the X and the S. I mean, it's the same thing though, right? The Abrasics Institute, a screen for a handful of sects related to Wicca, was a center for research and a study of unexplained phenomena, but also of parascience and everything related to the various forms of magic. There were courses on occult sciences. In December 1996, the Institute was suspected of having children delivered by Mark Dutroy for ritual murders as part of satanic rituals. Founded in 1990, blah, 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 by Francis Desmet, known as the Grandmaster Anubis, also who was also an employee of a large public administration, the Museum of Natural History of Brussels, and Dominique Kindermans, known as the Supreme High Priestess. The Abrasics Institute offered an education recognized by Yul Ruga, Great Master Supreme Wicca Occidental. We could thus learn about various themes, ceremonial magic, necromancy, gnosis, etc. Overall, the Abrasics Institute claimed to be Western Wicca. Its members said they were Luciferian, sorcerers, or sometimes simply mages. The Abrasics Institute, born on the ashes of the Belgian association Coven Cernunnos. Now, fun fact, Wicca worship, people in Wicca, they worship a male and female god, the horned god and the triple goddess. The horned god is known as Cernunnos, which by shorthand is CERN. Okay, I don't want to take you down a side rabbit hole, but there's that. It even says in the article here, the name of Abrasax can be compared to Abraxas. Dominique Kindersman, High Priestess of Wicca, Supreme Priestess of the Belgian Church of Satan, frequented Les Lotes, an esoteric bookstore created in September 88 in St. Gilles, the Initiatory Luciferian Order, or Universal Church of Lucifer. In 1994, Kindersman was publicized by the RTBF program, blah, 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 which made a lot of noise and gave unexpected influence to the Church of Satan. Due to suspicions of satanic ritualized sexual abuse, a search was carried out by Belgian police December 21st, 1996, on the premises of the Order of Abraxas. They discovered a refrigerator filled with animal blood and human skulls. The Abrasics Institute would have served as a scapegoat in the Dutroy case. Nevertheless, Samir Ayush, who spent 10 years as a victim of Satanist sects, claimed to have seen several children raped during rituals practiced at this institute. And guys, that's why women trust the bears more than us. I don't know what to tell you. That's terrible. I'm joking, of course. The film has lots of embedded symbolism in there, and sometimes reality is showing us these things, right? When you have a real case like the Abrasics Institute, and you have a real place like Bohemian Grove, you think that these movies are just sensationalist fiction. But it could be more true than you think, than you want to think, right? And that's what's really scary. But ultimately, I think the most interesting element of this movie is manifesting spirits into the world through the television. Which is why we talk about this all the time. It's why entertainment is the big conspiracy daddy of them all. Whew, all right. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for being a supporter in whichever form and fashion you desire. I appreciate you. You guys keep the show alive. I say that, I mean that. That's you. Thank you for keeping the show alive. And thank you for being supporters. And I hope I put some clarity to some ideas there, or at least some intriguing information. I thought it was a fun movie. Now you could argue like, well, maybe you're taking part of the ritual by watching this thing. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not opposed to that thing, but it was an interesting study to take. So thanks for listening to the show. Till next time, stay positive.